Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
So where do you stand on the Steve Jobs biographies? The 2011 book written by Walter Isaacson and authorized by Apple founder Jobs himself before he died in 2011 was a bestseller. But many of the people at Apple, including CEO Tim Cook, hated it. He said it just portrayed Steve Jobs as a greedy, selfish egomaniac. He and others are now embracing the new unauthorized biography, Becoming Steve Jobs, by journalist Brent Schlender, who became something of a friend to Jobs, and Rick Tedzeli, executive editor of Fast Company. They say they wanted to paint a more complete picture as Jobs is first fired from Apple, then experiences failure at Next, and finally learns to work with a team at Pixar before his triumphant return to Apple in 1997. So let's hear from them. Rick Tedzeli, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And Brent, hello to you as well.
I'm doing pretty well.
Good. Start with you. What was your thinking? What was missing from not just the previous book, but the other accounts of Steve Jobs?
Well, first of all, I don't want to say that this was some sort of reactionary idea I had as a result of reading that book, you know, Walter Isaacson's book, which was, to me, fine work done under great pressure. What I was wanting to do was try to make better use of my own experiences knowing Steve for 25 years. Obviously, a journalist-source relationship, but there were many times when we were just basically conversants. We just talked. He would invite me over to his house. I saw different sides of this guy before he got his cancer. I saw different sides of him before he was able to get back to Apple. I saw him working at Pixar. I saw him working at Next. He had a lot of different dimensions, and these aren't always reflected so well in a lot of the things that have been written about him, mainly because he protected himself from being examined or seen up close and personal by people like me.
You say in your introduction that you feel that there are myths about him and many negative ones that have been ossified in people's minds. And let's get right to it. The number one myth that Steve Jobs was kind of a jerk. But you also show him, especially as a young man, as being, well, kind of a jerk.
Steve Jobs, you know, could be totally irascible and he could be a real jerk. And he could be that through his life. On the other hand, when he was young, that attitude was part of what cost him his job. He really could not muster enough finesse to manage a group of talented people over the long haul. So his successes were brilliant, but they flamed out. Nobody on the Mac team did particularly interesting work after developing the Mac. When he came back to Apple in 1997, he was still very tough. He was incredibly demanding, but he had also developed patience. And the interesting thing is when you interview people who worked for him and had been fired and their relationships had ended badly, they all say they did the best work of their lives for him. And, you know, they ask, why would I have worked for somebody like that stereotype for 15 years?
If that was all there was to the person.
Exactly. Right. And we felt that there was this other side of him that had been neglected. You start to see sides of him as a manager that emerged during the last 10 years of his life that are directly counter to that early, brash, young guy.
Well, Rick Tedzeli, hold on for a second there, because I want to rush to say I don't normally refer to people as a jerk, but that's the tame version of what people would say about him in those days. I mean, he would be in a meeting and say, your work is S, and you are an idiot, or your user interface sucks. I mean, this was the way he treated people. He's forced out. He goes into exile for 12 years. Brent, you say it was during these 12 years that he changed.
Well, you know, he went through what was basically the school of hard knocks at Next, where he thought he was going to prove to the world what a brilliant, instinctively good entrepreneur he really was, and that he didn't need Apple, that he could outdo Apple, design an organization that would create a whole new kind of computing platform that would render Apple obsolete. He just made mistake after mistake after mistake, alienated people. Now he was the boss, so he had only one person to blame.
When he presented the computer, he'd promised it would cost $3,000. It cost $7,000 more. But his presentation was so great that he got a standing ovation, and you wrote in the Wall Street Journal, the machine was dazzling. You say now in the book, Brent, that you were bamboozled.
A lot of us were bamboozled by that. He's such a good showman that in itself was news.
But I guess the question is, are you both kind of bamboozled now? I mean, obviously he was a genius, and obviously he changed the world with some of his inventions or his creations. But give us that sense that you found that he was more than we've heard.
Well, here's the thing. You know, what you find in the reaction to the book and also the way it's been set up as this contrast to Isaacson's book, which is excellent in its own right, is the fact that Steve Jobs is kind of a religious issue. People have an investment in thinking that he was a jerk. Or on the Apple side, they have an investment in thinking, that he was a saint. He was neither. Now, our book portrays things in his life that haven't been portrayed before. Those things are undeniably warm and humane and human. The other thing about that idea that he just stayed a jerk his whole life, one of the things that really fails to address is why did he succeed at Apple the second time when he failed the first time around? You know?
And what do you think the answer is?
The answer is that he had changed. For instance, he was an impatient person in terms of wanting to get things done, wanting to get details right. But he was also patient. His executive team that he assembled in 1997 when he got back there remained very much the same through his last 15 years. Now, if you're just a jerk, how do you keep a group together like that? If you're just a jerk, how do you go from creating these one-hit wonders like the Mac and the Apple II to creating 15 years of progressively more interesting, more complicated products and expanding your company from, being in a death spiral to being the most valuable company in the world? These kinds of changes are only possible with some sort of growth.
Well, and Brent, you both tell a story that's quite compelling about Tim Cook, who was the COO, now CEO, who visited Steve Jobs when Jobs was dying and desperately in need of a liver donation. Tell that story. Tim Cook had his blood tested.
It's just one anecdote that Tim told us as an attempt to show that Steve was not this totally self-absorbed, selfish, me, me, me kind of guy. That, Tim Cook really was obviously very fond of Steve, and it hurt him to watch Steve deteriorate before his very eyes. You cannot game the liver transplant list. And Tim went secretly, had all the tests, and it matched. Mm. And so he goes to see Steve, and as he starts to suggest this idea, Steve could hardly move at this time. He was just prone on the bed, skinny, he had this ascites, his belly was distended. And he popped up in the bed as Tim was starting to say, I'd like to give you part of my liver. And he said, no. Now, Steve needed a liver really badly, but he did not want a part of Tim's liver because he did not want to do anything to risk Tim's life.
I just love a portion of the book where you really learn about Steve Jobs' times at Pixar and how much he learned from the people there who were at the time making the film Toy Story. And there's just kind of I think you even say it, that Woody had an influence on Steve Jobs. It's kind of sweet. How did you mean?
You know, Robin, we talked to John Lasseter, the director of Toy Story, about the theory that Steve was kind of like Woody and that he had been exiled. He has to go track down Buzz, and he's a brilliant guy, but his own flaws undermine him, and he has to find a way back home. And John said, well, maybe. it's perhaps a little too simple
too
of
neat.
An analogy. It's too neat, right? And Steve's life was not neat. I mean, there was great change, but if you look at things like Apple's labor collusion or some of the issues around Foxconn or different things like that, it's a company that can do extraordinary things and can do extremely unextraordinary things as well.
Yeah. Again, the new unauthorized biography that's being embraced by the people at Apple who knew Steve Jobs best is called Becoming Steve Jobs. We've been talking to journalist Brent Schlender and Rick Tetzeli, executive editor of Fast Company, the authors. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Robin.
Great
appreciate
to be here,
it.
Robin.